The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Joe Allen and Matt Gaetz. We talk transhumanism, Ron DeSantis, and a very interesting, wild idea to immunize Donald Trump against the Department of Justice. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Congressman Matt Gaetz. He has lots of topics. He might have a future in television. He's been guest hosting quite often. I'm told the ratings are terrific. Congressman, welcome to the program. You have a rather creative idea regarding Donald Trump testifying. I don't even quite understand it, so walk us through it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's all that creative. Let's start here. If Congress does not assert its equities in this Jack Smith matter, those equities will dissolve. Right now, my worry is that too many of my colleagues in Congress think, well, this is an ongoing matter, so we just have to allow it to play out. And it's the same loser mentality that infected much of the Congress in the early days of the Robert Mueller investigation. Obviously, we proved that to be the fraud that it was. And not for nothing, Charlie, but you got to see this guy McGonigal, who was on the ground floor of the investigation to accuse Trump of working with Russia, has now pled guilty to working with Russia. But back to this matter, here's what we ought to do, and we shouldn't make it that complicated. First, we should tell Jack Smith that he has to show up and give a transcribed interview to the House Judiciary Committee in the next 15 days. If he doesn't do that, we should issue a subpoena. If he ignores the subpoena, we should hold him in criminal contempt of Congress and force him to be the first prosecutor to bring a case while under criminal contempt himself. And if Merrick Garland won't enforce that criminal contempt, then he subjects himself to an impeachment of the House. So it would be an attorney general under impeachment, a prosecutor under contempt. And I think that frames what's going on better than just sitting back and hoping we hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil as this plays out. Because if we grant the premise, Charlie, that this is an ongoing legitimate matter, then it just builds into it the notion that it is law enforcement activity and not election interference. Congress has equities at play with election interference. We ought to do that. Simultaneous to that, you can actually bring President Trump in to give testimony to the Congress, and in doing so, immunize him. Now, there's different forms of immunity that take place at the committee level, subcommittee level. In some instances, for full immunity, you have to have more of a supermajority vote. But if you had a supermajority vote of a committee, like Speaker McCarthy could set up a select committee tomorrow that could bring Trump in and immunize him, and then we could proceed with the very legitimate investigative work that we're doing of the Bidens and the corrupt DOJ. Unfortunately, none of those things are happening. Instead, Congress is not in Washington, not assembled. And I think the timing is on purpose. No timing in D.C. is ever just, you know, a mere coincidence. And so right as Congress is leaving town, right as we're walking away from our equities, you see this acceleration of activity against
Trump. So, yeah, let's be specific here, though. So immunize him from what crimes, even if he's under current indictment? Is that including even the obstruction claims? And give us some examples of how this has been used recently.
Well, it hasn't been used recently, but obviously we're aware of the ability for any person to plead the fifth. You can dissolve someone's ability to plead the fifth if you immunize them. And so Congress has this ability that's been recognized. It's even laid out in 18 U.S.C. 6002 and 6005, if folks want to look it up. But there, you've got the ability to say, well, we're hereby compelling your testimony. We're giving you immunity for anything you say to us and anything that that would lead to. And so, for example, if President Trump came in and said, I'm here to give you testimony about the witch hunt, the abuse of criminal process that Congress has legitimate oversight equities to resolve. And if he were to say things to us, we could immunize him for that conduct that he were to discuss.
Does it take a vote?
It frequently happens. These aren't usual times.
Is it a committee vote? Is it the whole House that has to vote on immunization? And when was the last time this statute was used?
I don't know when the last time it was used. I can say it can be any committee or subcommittee that can grant immunity. So we could even bring him into the subcommittee chaired by my good friend and colleague Andy Biggs, the crime subcommittee that has jurisdiction over some of these activities of the Department of Justice. And if Trump were to essentially become a whistleblower, you have to think about it almost like whistleblower protections. Trump, the ultimate whistleblower, potentially the beneficiary of congressional immunity on some of the information.
Wait, hold on. I just want to make sure I understand this. So that Donald Trump could be called in, let's say, by the Andy Biggs Committee or whatever, or the Weaponization of Government Committee, which obviously he's a subject matter expert. And as long as he is giving whistleblower testimony on each one of the charges against him, that would effectively neuter the Department of Justice from being able to continue to pursue charges against him. Am I understanding this correctly?
It's a little more nuanced than that, Charlie. You're immunized for the statements you make and the conduct that uncovers. You know, if we're talking in hypotheticals, if President Trump had committed a murder somewhere, I don't know that giving testimony about the weaponization of the federal government would immunize that type of conduct. But I think particularly where you've got Jack Smith trying to fashion the actions the president took while in office to try to evaluate and investigate information that was coming across his desk, you could certainly immunize him for that. So I think that the areas where we could provide the broadest immunity for President Trump would be around the conspiracy charges, the deprivation of rights charges. It's almost hard to say with a straight face that Jack Smith has brought. In fact, it was the FBI doing the most to deprive people of their rights when they had agents meeting with Facebook, Meta, Twitter, all these technology companies to try to get the Hunter Biden laptop story just scrubbed from the entire information domain during the 2020 presidential contest. So that would be a specific area where I think we could neuter the deprivation of rights and conspiracy charges in the Jack Smith indictment if we brought President Trump in for whistleblower testimony.
And so potentially Donald Trump could come in as a whistleblower and blow the whistle on what was happening up in the events of leading up to January 6th. Nancy Pelosi didn't want to give troops, you know, because a lot of the indictment is centered around the events that lead up to that. And so I see no downside here. So you're going to have to walk me through this, Matt. What you're saying is interesting. I don't know if it'll stand up in court, but it's certainly worth a try. And this is exactly the type of thing we need. As the Department of Justice is used as a Democrat super PAC, why wouldn't we try to offer Donald Trump immunity and force the hand of the Department of Justice, especially on the conspiracy charges and the January 6th related stuff? Is there any downside here? I don't quite see a negative.
Well, in theory, the downside of bringing anyone before Congress to give testimony is that if you say something that is material and that is not accurate, that can create a cascade of follow-on charges. So it's never something that you typically think of as a first step to try to bring people into Congress to give testimony, because it's not typically something people enjoy a great deal. But in this case, I think we misunderstand the fight that we are in. Right now, you have the Department of Justice functioning as the enforcement wing of the Democratic Party. And in a lot of ways, what you're seeing now was set up by Eric Holder and Barack Obama, because they got some of their most talented political operatives and they gave them the ability to bring charges. They turn them into prosecutors that are now career prosecutors and above reproach. But the reality is these are left wing, oftentimes Soros aligned and trained killers. And they're coming after our people, our movement, and our president. And I think that if Congress just accepts this premise that it's an ongoing matter and thus we shouldn't be involved, then you underscore the legitimacy of that very matter. That's where I'm in the minority of the majority. I want to be very clear with you, Charlie. Most Republicans in Congress just think we ought to throw our hands in the air and allow the chips to fall where they may. I think that is a tremendous disservice to the Constitution when we are facing an election interference operation, not a legitimate prosecution.
Look, we need every creative idea. This is not a legitimate indictment of Donald Trump. It's not a legitimate investigation. We need to reject the premise. And so what you're saying, Matt Gaetz, is most of your Republican colleagues are gutless wonders and don't want to deal with this. But what we should do is we should have Donald Trump come in, force him to testify, immunize him, and then force a constitutional issue. I'm fully in support of that. There is no other option, everybody. We're just going to sit around and hope that a rigged D.C. jury and zip code justice and the interference of an election. No. It's time to fight fire with fire. Let's fight back. Look, I don't know if it's going to stand up in court. You got to try. I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com. I want you guys to check out ReliefFactor.com. 100% drug-free, knee pain, back pain, joint pain, elbow pain. Check out Relief Factor Energy. Help makes your body make nutrients readily available. Relief Factor Sleep. I know a lot of you are probably having trouble sleeping. Relief Factor Sleep could be the best solution for you. Everybody goes to bed. Not everybody sleeps. We're all about helping people live lives that are filled with connection, exploration, passion, and emotion. That is what his life is all about. Make sure you guys are sleeping well. It's a major part of life. Check it out right now. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. So, Matt, we're into the reboot, realignment. I've lost track of how many re's. I've said this before, and I get hate mail for it. I don't care. Governor DeSantis is a wonderful governor. Not running a good presidential campaign, not reading the room. Ron DeSantis' campaign manager is out and replaced with chief of staff. Matt Gaetz, you are a Floridian and a friend of Ron DeSantis, but you're behind Donald Trump for the presidency. What's going on here?
I agree with you. Ron's done a great job as governor of Florida, and frankly, I'm working pretty hard to keep him the governor of Florida for the next few years. A pattern I've seen before from Ron DeSantis. In 2018, when I was working as a senior part of his campaign, he woke up one day and didn't think the campaign was going well, and he asked me to do an audit or a review of the personnel we'd assembled. And I told him that if we continued with that team, that Andrew Gillum would be the governor of Florida and he would not be. And in sweeping fashion, he replaced the senior members of the team. And the great irony is he brought in Susie Wiles to right the ship. She did. Ron won. He's done a great job. And now Susie Wiles is the titular head of the Trump campaign. So the interesting square dancing that we do, kind of trading partners around in Florida politics a good bit on the campaign staff side. And now I think Ron has had a similar realization that the team that he had in place had burnt through tens of millions of dollars, that Ron DeSantis has waged a campaign against his own vote share. Ron DeSantis was knocking down about a third of the vote in the Republican primary before he became a candidate. And since becoming a candidate, he's clubbed his own vote share down to about half of where it was before he got in the race. So I think that would make anybody running question the team they had around him and the predicate of the strategy. Right now, I don't think it's anything wrong with Ron DeSantis and his campaign. I think it's just that the American people see the moment we're in, and we see that President Trump has unique skills and experience and capability to get our economy going again, and also to obliterate a weaponized government that's been turned against our people. I don't know that Ron is really in a moment to captivate that energy that President Trump seems to have really zeroed in on.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's engaging in a policy debate. That's not what this is at all, right? This is a primal scream, as Steve Bannon would say. This is a time to get back at the Uniparty for an all-out Bolshevik Maoist agenda against the American people. And we want a street fighter. We want a bodyguard. We want a UFC champion. We don't need policy talks. And by the way, I said this yesterday on social media. Ron DeSantis lays out this classical education plan. I think it's wonderful. That's him at his best. Is it time for Ron DeSantis to not further damage his national bona fides and continue as a rock star governor of Florida and then maybe look at potential political prospects?
Yeah, I think so. Ron's a young man. He's brilliant and driven, and I think he's got a bright political future ahead in Florida and in national politics. And I'm going to be a big cheerleader of his when he comes back to resume the governorship in the Sunshine State. I do think that getting drubbed in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada doesn't necessarily set up those future prospects as well as unifying behind President Trump. But, you know, there is a policy debate going on. You're right that it's not the primal urge that draws us to a particular campaign. But we do need to make sure some of these arguments that are being made don't prevail. I just saw today, Charlie, Nikki Haley criticized the great senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, for putting holds on these woke generals who want to continue to pay for abortions and abortion services and abortion travel with taxpayer money. And so we do need to see some of these bad ideas, like those advanced by Nikki Haley, defeated. We need to see the bad ideas that Chris Christie and Mike Pence are advancing regarding Ukraine defeated. Ukraine's not the 51st state. Our future is not inexorably linked to theirs. And I think President Trump's in a position to really get the best of both worlds, the right policy arguments, but then also the right visceral urge to make the necessary changes we have to make to save the country.
Look, I'm going to be talking to some donors tonight, some of which agree with me, some of which disagree. You know, some of them text me, said, Charlie, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Glenn Youngkin. Let me just say my advice publicly. It's all a waste of time, guys. Okay, these are nice people. Glenn Youngkin, good governor of Virginia. Ron DeSantis, next batter up, go waste another couple hundred million. Stop it, guys. Get behind Trump. Chase ballots, secure our elections, have all these wonderful governors. You guys can have the feast of the governors in 2028. But we need a country. Donald Trump's going to win the primary, whether by 30 points or 50 points. That's the mystery. That's the only question, is the margin at this point. Let's do the boring stuff, chase ballots, secure elections, stuff Ron DeSantis actually did very well in Florida. And I don't want him to mess up his future political prospects. He's an excellent governor. This is not his time. Matt Gaetz, excellent job. Thanks so much. If you listen to my podcast for some time, you've heard me talk about these digestive enzymes called MassZymes from Bioptimizers. MassZymes are 100% plant-based, naturally derived enzymes that digest proteins, starches, sugars, fibers, and fats. And these have been a life changer for my digestion. For those who have never tried MassZymes, it is your chance, so listen up. You can score 10% on your discount on either 120 or 250 caps bottles of MassZymes. Just use promo code KIRK10. The challenge is very simple. Try MassZymes and see all the positive changes of enhanced digestion and nutrient absorption. If your digestion issues, gas, bloating, and fatigue after meals are not gone after you've taken a full bottle, you've lost nothing. But if they are, your life is back on track. To get your bottle of MassZymes right now, start the challenge. Go to MassZymes.com/Kirk or use coupon code KIRK10. They're a wonderful company. Check it out right now. MassZymes.com/Kirk. I use it. You should too. Promo code KIRK10. Joining us now is Joe Allen, author of a very compelling book, Dark Eon. Joe, you have been really a prophetic voice talking about AI for quite some time now. The book is Transhumanism and the War Against Humanity. You know, Joe, I think a lot about artificial intelligence and what it means for our species and for our civilization. I want to get into that and some questions that I have for you. But first, tell us about your book.
Well, Charlie, thank you very much. And the book really is as deep a dive as you're going to get into the ideologies that drive some of the most powerful corporations and NGOs on the planet, many that you've talked about and we've talked about, of course, Google, Facebook, Meta, Amazon, and the World Economic Forum, to mention just a few. I also go into the technologies themselves, of course, the ideology or the dreams that are put forward, nightmares for us, are always going to exceed the technologies themselves. And so I hope to give the reader a good sense of where we're at right now, or where I was at when I submitted the book. Things have actually changed so fast that they've already passed me up. But in the end, what I really hope to communicate is that this is, in fact, spiritual warfare, that it is a spiritual vision of what the human being is, of what the purpose of the human being is, what the purpose of our civilization is, and that these competing ideas are coming to a head. Some real world examples, I think, you had the response to COVID as a sort of trial run as what it would be like if you had one side of humanity that sees their status as being, as is hinging upon their biological status, their technological status, and the use of technologies to basically separate humanity into the acceptable and the unacceptable, such as the vaccine passports and also the contact tracing technologies that were rolled out in places like Singapore.
So the book, is it done in novel form or is it just kind of an overview? Just walk us through the structure of the book.
So I begin, obviously, just to describe what is transhumanism, the desire to optimize the human being and the eventual goal of merging human beings with technology. But I also go into the history of transhumanism. Some of the more profound thinkers, however much I disagree with them, the ones that are quite, I think, familiar to many in your audience, Ray Kurzweil or Martin Rothblatt, but also some of the more obscure figures like Ben Goertzel, who has recently come to the fore in media, but has been there for a long time. And Hugo de Garis, I spend a lot of time on his vision of what the future will be like once artificial intelligence reaches full maturity. You know, the first part really is to look at the supposed inevitability of a transhuman turn in human civilization, looking at the underpinnings in the theory of evolution, biological evolution, cultural evolution, digital evolution. The second part begins to move more into the spiritual nature of this. I do talk about the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset, and I do talk about some of the more common figures like Elon Musk and Yuval Noah Harari, actually kind of comparing them and seeing really who is the villain and who is the hero. I don't think that any villains or heroes emerge in any clear way from this story. It all looks very murky and very bleak. Moving to the end, though, the third part is really looking at the spiritual response to this. And the maybe the most compelling chapter, which is the fruition of a few short pieces that I've published before, Countdown to Gigadeath, confronting this concept of existential risk and the idea that the technologies we're creating could either eradicate human beings, eradicate most human beings, or even just eradicate a significant proportion of the human population. I don't necessarily, this is not a book about doom, but it's definitely a book that follows the ideas of existential risk to their logical conclusion.
So is there an argument to be made that the inevitability of AI and the merging might be a lot clumsier than the predictions would suggest? We can kind of see where this is headed in the language models. We can see the sophistication and the outright creepiness of the power of ChatGPT. At the same time, though, there have been far more technological predictions that have failed in the timeline than have ever actually come to fruition. Now, this might be different. This actually might be the one that is ahead of the curve. There is an accelerant behind this, a lot of money, and also, but Joe, can you, you know, kind of riff on that a little bit? Because there is this sense in the high-minded tech communities that this thing is coming. We might as well get on the right side of it. We have to start merging it. It's just a matter of time before we're putting stuff into our heads. And I'm a little bit more skeptical when I start hearing groupthink from people that have been wrong about basically everything. Where do you fall on this, Joe?
You know, to steal a line that Nick Bostrom, in fact, stole, the predictions are as confident as they are diverse. And that has always been the case. Futurists have never, no single futurist has ever envisioned even the immediate future, let alone the long-term future, exactly right. And all of their visions for the future diverge. But what I do, and I try my best to capture that diversity, what I do see happening, though, if you look at even the predictions from the post-war era, or if you go all the way back to H.G. Wells and his contemporaries.
Yeah, no, I was going to mention it. Yeah, the one mind, right? That's Gnosticism. But yeah, keep
going. At its core, I think the project of futurism, as you have all these different visions moving towards the future, and as you have powerful people and powerful corporations who sign on to these visions of the future, some approximation of those futures does in fact come to pass. And so while I'm not myself a futurist, and I don't try to predict even the next decade with any exacting accuracy, I do think that something like a broad vision of what is around the corner can be gleaned from these futurist predictions, if only by looking at the intention and the power of the people who are pushing them. Now, I think that the myth of inevitability is extremely dangerous because it paralyzes people in the face of change. And I also think that the myth of progress is a real danger because it means that you just simply aren't part of the relevant course of history. I think that people who do not want these futures, which are definitely coming from the top down, if they don't want to live them out or sign on to them, then they have to first be able to reject them and secondly, to envision their future. What future do you want? Not just in the next 5 years, but for your children, your grandchildren,
that's a great
for civilization
point.
As a whole.
And in clinical literature, people that deal with teleological anxiety, meaning where are they going, that's actually rather daunting. And so, for example, you know, a common thing Jordan Peterson talks about, he didn't come up with this, but he's popularized it. Here's a one-page piece of paper. What do you want? And a majority of people really, they can't articulate what do you want your life to look like? What are your goals? What do you want your species to look like? These are existential questions when in reality, Joe, most people would just be kind of told, tell me what to do. Tell me what to want. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, which I agree completely, is that while we still have time left on the clock, should we be now sending out a distress signal? Now's the time to organize your sovereignty. Now's the time to commit to wanting to be free. Is that a fair summary of the call to action, Joe Allen?
Absolutely. I think it will be different for different people and different societies. So that in America and different regions or even subcultures of America, the response to the future is always going to be different. But there are some basic orientations that can be generalized. The orientation of transhumanists or accelerationists, this is an orientation which holds technology up as the highest power on Earth and as a sort of salvific force, that is the salvation of humanity. And there are various other secular and what I am most have the most affinity for, the spiritual or religious traditions. These do stand as a counterpoint to that, especially the spiritual traditions. But they're obviously the world is quite a diverse place, and there will be diverse responses to that sort of technocratic or transhumanist orientation towards technology as the way forward. Yes. And I think that we are coming to an inflection point where it may not be binary, but it will be very different in those places, in those cultures, which accept this as being the norm and those which resist it. Those trajectories are going to be significantly different, however much gray area there is between them.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, look, most people that, I mean, there's a potential of mass job displacement, and not just in the ways that you might anticipate. You know, there's a new article out that they say, oh, the news is now going to be administered by AI-created people. I say, how's that any different than CNN? It's just going to save them money, right? They just hire some, it's the same thing. For us, we have our jobs protected because the AI doesn't agree with everything we say, at least protected for now. However, Joe, I want to explore this Gnostic element and also talk about H.G. Wells' essay/book, World Mind. I think there is this belief that the connectivity of a hive mind, a oneness, which is the gnosis, that's where we get the word Gnosticism, there is this hermetic, like almost magic wizardry appeal to AI that goes back thousands and thousands of years. Joe Allen, the book is Dark Eon. Check it out. And the book will be released on August 29th. I think we have that long before the machines take over the world. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. MyPillow's 20-year anniversary, they're celebrating over 80 million pillows sold. Mike Lindell with MyPillow wants to thank you by giving you the lowest price in history on their MyPillows. You'll receive a queen-size MyPillow for $19.98. Regular price is $69.98. and just $10 more for a king size. With this special anniversary offer, you'll receive a deep discount on all MyPillow products, such as their bed sheets, mattress toppers, pet beds, mattresses, my slippers, and so much more. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square and use promo code Kirk to receive this amazing offer on the queen size MyPillow. It's time to start getting the quality sleep you deserve. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Receive this amazing offer on the queen size MyPillow. Let's support my friend Mike Lindell. MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. It's MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. So, Joe, talk about any positives that could come out of AI now being at our disposal and taking over the world.
You know what? I think that artificial intelligence is really going to force people to reckon with human limitation. And it will force people to understand what it means to be human in the face of something that at least seems like an artificial or non-human intelligence.
Well, that was really succinct. Yeah, I mean, for me, and this is, you know, I went through a lot of, I actually did a whole weekend of thinking about this while my phone was off. I said, look, it's going to challenge me to be the best possible human I can. If I lose out to machines, then so be it. But I'm going to become the best version of myself, and I'm going to use it as an iron sharpening iron type thing. But I have a soul and the machine does not. I have a soul and the machine does not. And that needs to be repeated. And it goes back to Genesis 1:26, 1:27, one of the most important scriptures. Who are we as human beings? We are made in the image of the Creator. The machine is not. So Dark Eon, transhumanism and the war against humanity. Let's talk immediate, like 30, 60, 90 days. What is getting rolled out here? Because it looks like ChatGPT is ahead of the curve. It's now at like a college level, language processing. Job displacement, we're going to see, this is not going to be a soft landing. Is that fair to say, Joe? There's going to be mass protests. I think there'll be clumsiness, economic anxiety. The rich will only get richer. Buckle up, as we would say on the Charlie Kirk Show, Joe Allen.
Absolutely. I think the writer's strike is a preview of what will come.
I agree.
It really is. I don't think that ChatGPT or any of its corresponding technologies, like, say, Bard, I don't think that they have anything like human creativity. The best human writers far exceed them. However, mediocre writers are going to get left in the dust, and I think Hollywood has had a problem with that for a long time. As it moves out, though, into the corporate world, as it moves out into other creative endeavors, and it already is, two things are going to happen. One, people who are becoming excellent are not going to be challenged with the sort of drudge work that would have been required in a pre-AI era. And I think that a lot of the practice and a lot of the discipline will suffer because of that. Now, also, though, more and more, you're going to see, I think, the expansion of what Yuval Noah Harari so detestably called the useless class. I believe Harari was 100% right about that, that there is already a growing useless class. And there will be a much larger useless class going forward. The answer to that, to me, make yourself useful and make other people of use.
So, yeah, this is going to be one of the. I mean, is it fair to say that this will be an existential question for the species over the next five? Is this going to happen in the next 5 years, 10 years? 20 years, I look at this as kind of a multi-decade question, Joe. I mean, it's going to make, I think, the transition from agrarian to the Industrial Revolution look like child's play.
And every intelligent prognosticator believes the same. You look at something that has been really jarring of late. We've covered this since they first announced it. Amazon's Amazon One payment system, the Palm payment system, rolling out at every Whole Foods store now. Has been at many Whole Foods stores for over a year and a half.
No, that's right. I'm not shocked by it. Yeah, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, going into entertainment venues, going into Panera Bread, all of these different places. So that palm payment system has religious significance for Christians who are well-versed in the prophecies of Revelation.
Correct.
With the mark on the hand in order to buy or sell. Also, it ties into Sam Altman's project, WorldCoin or WorldID, the kind of evil orb that takes your iris scan, ties that to a blockchain-based currency, and also can be used, and they're partnering with governments right now, used as a biometric identification for various purposes. The one he proposes that stands out the most is that it would be used to verify your humanness on the internet in an era in which bots are already growing in number but will proliferate. So ChatGPT from OpenAI, created by Sam Altman, creates a problem. Sam Altman has a solution on the other side to tie your biometric identity to your digital identity, to your wallet, and ultimately to your access to certain parts of the internet. These are the immediate manifestations of long-term trends. If you look at, for instance, the history of credit card adoption and credit card use, it kind of chugged along for a time, and then as it became more and more convenient and integrated into the economic system, shot up. I don't think there are enough people who are alarmed by the concept of biometric payment systems to stop that ball from rolling. So whatever the ultimate outcome is, we are moving into an era where these sorts of technologies will be adopted in greater and greater numbers, and the extremity of those technologies will increase over time. And going forward, we are already there at this point of bifurcation among those who would like to keep things as they are, or maybe even turn back the clock a little bit towards a more human era, and those who want to race forward. And as I said before, that gray area in between, I believe, will shrink significantly. And you're right, it's not something that tomorrow you'll wake up and suddenly robots will be flying out of the sky. It's just long term.
Joe Allen, check out his book, Dark Eon. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
You've spoken and we've heard you loud and clear. We're proud to announce our brand new ACLJ Life and Liberty Drive. Our legal teams will be focusing on the issues that you've told us matter the most to you, life and religious liberty. We're redoubling our efforts to beat back the radical left's attacks on your constitutional religious freedoms and to defend the sanctity of human life. This is your moment to get in the fight. Every tax-deductible gift will be doubled. Go to ACLJ.org right now and join us in the fight.